Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 515, titled Update on the GOP-Islamist Connection. This is being recorded on June 12th of 2005. In our most recently recorded program, For the Record 514, it was our privilege to be joined by John Loftus, author and former Justice Department investigator, and he described, among other things, the relationship between Republican super lobbyist Grover Norquist, one of the linchpins of the GOP right, and a number of Islamists, including people linked with the milieu of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and so forth. We have dealt at great length in numerous past broadcasts with Grover Norquist, one of the linchpins of the GOP far right, a man very, very close to Karl Rove, Bush's right-hand man, called by some Bush's brain, and the White House chief of staff, in my opinion, the most powerful single individual in Washington. And Grover Norquist, along with Karl Rove, precipitated the formation of the Islamic Institute. This was a nonprofit group that functioned in close coordination with the GOP, and in many ways constituted something of an extension of the GOP's ethnic outreach organization, which in the past had incorporated many Nazis and fascists for the purposes of anti-communism and also for the purposes of counterbalancing the, quote, Jewish influence, unquote, in America. We have dealt with that and with Grover Norquist and the Islamic Institute in numerous programs. Please go to the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and use the search function, and you will be able to locate those broadcasts, and then you can either listen to them on the WFMU streaming website at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, and or read about them at great length in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Grover Norquist has been in the news lately, and we're going to be accessing some information from a fellow traveler of Grover Norquist. This is a fellow named Daniel Pipes. I should stress that I do not hold a brief for Daniel Pipes. He's an ardent supporter of George Bush, which is kind of remarkable in and of itself, and obviously I am less than thrilled with George Bush. Daniel Pipes, however, unlike some elements of the GOP right, has been critical of the GOP-Islamist connection. How he can continue to support George Bush is a mystery to me. He is certainly following in the steps of his father, Richard Pipes, who was an ardent supporter of Ronald Reagan, and the elder George Bush. So my caveat, and a strong one it is, about Daniel Pipes notwithstanding, I think that he is engaging in some exposés and strong criticism of Grover Norquist can be taken at face value. Certainly this is not Daniel Pipes is not someone who would be slanting things in an anti-Bush, anti-GOP journalistic direction simply because he supports those elements. So with that caveat in mind, listen to the following. This is from the Daniel Pipes blog of April 14th of 2005. Is Grover Norquist an Islamist? What this discusses is the fact that Grover Norquist has married a Palestinian Muslim. There has been speculation among some of his colleagues that he may have converted to Islam. The latter remains to be seen. So again, is Grover Norquist an Islamist? Paul Sperry, author of the new book Infiltration, in an interview calls Grover Norquist, quote, an agent of influence for Islamists in Washington, unquote. When asked by frontpagemag.com why a Republican anti-tax lobbyist should so passionately promote Islamist causes, Sperry implied that Norquist has converted to Islam. Quote, he's marrying a Muslim, and when I asked Norquist if he himself has converted to Islam, he brushed off the question as, quote, too personal. As Lawrence Oster comments on this exchange, quote, clearly, if Norquist hadn't converted to Islam or weren't in the process of doing so, he would simply have answered no, unquote. Indeed, Norquist married Sama Al-Reyes, a Palestinian Muslim, on April 2, 2005, and Islamic law limits a Muslim woman to marrying a man who is Muslim. This is not an abstract dictum, but a very serious imperative, with many honor killings having resulted from a woman ignoring her family's wishes. Al-Reyes has radical Islamist credentials of her own. She served as communications director at the Islamic Free Market Institute, the Islamist organization Norquist helped found. Now, She is employed as a public affairs officer at the U.S. Agency for International Development, and so it appears that yet another Islamist finds employment in a branch of the U.S. government. By the way, USAID has frequently served as a cover for various intelligence activities over the decades, and it is for her, for that group, that Mrs. Norquist, I don't know how you'd title her, has worked. It is working, I should say. Continuing with this article, Norquist has for some years now been promoting Islamist organizations, including even the Council on American Islamic Relations. For example, he spoke at CAIR's conference, quote, "A Better America in a Better World," unquote, on October 5, 2004. Frank Gaffney has researched Norquist's ties to Islamists in his exhaustive, careful, and convincing study, Agent of Influence, unquote, and concludes that Norquist is enabling, quote, "a political influence operation to advance the cause of radical Islamists and targeted most particularly at the Bush administration," unquote. But if Norquist is indeed a convert to Islam, it could be that he is not just enabling the Islamist causes, but is himself an Islamist. Quite a statement and quite an article by someone who is himself part of the GOP right wing. And hence, I think we can assume that this is not slanting by the, quote, liberal news media, unquote. And again, a caveat about Daniel Pipes. In our interview with John Loftus, we talked about Sami Al-Arian. He is one of the people with whom Grover Norquist was associated, and Sami Al-Arian is now on trial in Florida. Sami Al-Arian is part of the GOP Islamist Connection, and interestingly, in his trial, he is associated in conspiracy charges with some individuals with whom he was relatively marginally associated. He may very well get off. It is grotesque that Sami Al-Arian has been labeled a political martyr by elements of the so-called progressive sector. As always, note my use of this term so-called. If, in fact, Sami Al-Arian gets off, and he might very well get off, this will no doubt be seen as vindication of the fact that this monster is allegedly some sort of persecuted creature. As we're going to see in the following article, however, the fact is that the most damning information against Sami Al-Arian came from wiretaps and other forms of intercepted communication in the early 90s, but the statute of limitations for prosecution in that instance has expired. As we heard in our interview with John Loftus, various people, including John Loftus, had been on Al-Arian's trail for many years, but unfortunately that lag in time has permitted the statute of limitations to erase what could be the most damning prosecutions, and so a relatively weak case has been brought against Sami Al-Arian. But no doubt if he gets off, he will be hailed as a martyr and so forth, and it will simply reinforce the grotesque elevation of this creature to some sort of admirable individual. Washington Post of June 7th, online June 8th in print. The following article is by John Mintz. Co-defendants in Florida deny ties to conspiracy at state law in Tampa, Florida, June 7th. It reads, three co-defendants of accused terrorist leader Sami Al-Arian, a former Florida University professor on trial here, staunchly deny any connection to the Palestinian terrorist group at the heart of the case, their lawyers said in court Tuesday. Quote, "This is a case of no evidence," unquote, said Bruce Howey, attorney for Chicago dry cleaner Ghassan Zayed Balut. After scouring 6 years of his client's computer use and all his bank records, quote, "the government came up with nothing," unquote. There is a vast discrepancy between the gravity and detail in the charges against Al-Arian and those against the other three on trial, whom the prosecution calls rank-and-file members of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, or PIJ, organization, which sponsors suicide attacks on Israelis, according to court documents. Parenthetically, this is one of the offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood that John Loftus referred to. Continuing, some defense attorneys said outside the courtroom in recent days that the three defendants, Balut, former university student Sami Taha Hamoudeh, and Illinois charity manager Hatim Naji Fariz, were swept into the case because of prosecutors' need to build a criminal case of conspiracy, in this case, conspiracy to kill and maim hundreds of Israelis since the 1980s. Legal experts said that the U.S. government had little choice but to craft a conspiracy case. The vast bulk of their evidence, derived from years of secret wiretaps and monitoring of faxes, centers on the early to mid-1990s, before Al-Arian's offices and home were searched, and he became more circumspect over the telephone. But the statute of limitations allows the prosecution to charge someone for crimes going back only 5 years, unless the charge is conspiracy, in which case the government can bring in allegations going back decades, as it has done in this trial. Again, this passage, because it's critical for understanding the complexities of the Al-Arian case. But the statute of limitations allows the prosecution to charge someone for crimes going back only 5 years, unless the charge is conspiracy, in which case the government can bring in allegations going back decades, as it has done in this trial. The problem for the prosecution, defense attorneys said, is that those secretly monitored wiretaps and faxes show Al-Arian discussing intimate details of PIJ's operations, not with his three co-defendants, but with five other men. All of those five men were top PIJ leaders with Al-Arian for years, U.S. prosecutors said, and all of them have been charged with him but with conspiracy to murder, but they are overseas and will not be tried in this case. Defense attorneys and criminal lawyers who have observed the case said the government was in a jam. How could it put on a trial for criminal conspiracy and have only one conspirator at the defense table? Quote, "The three defendants on trial with Al-Arian are basically stage props," unquote, said Steve Crawford, a former federal prosecutor who has followed the case and who recently represented Hamoudeh's wife on an unrelated fraud charge. Quote, "The government didn't have enough of the big guns from PIJ here to give a visual showing of a conspiracy, so they sweep in the poor mopes at the bottom," unquote. Defense lawyers and prosecutors declined to comment. U.S. District Judge James Moody has barred them from speaking about the case outside the courtroom. The five overseas defendants who are not on trial now were caught in hundreds of phone calls and faxes discussing the key strategic issues then facing PIJ, deep internal struggles, the disappearance of millions of dollars, how to placate its angry financial backers in the Iranian government, and whether to merge with the Islamic Resistance Movement, a competing militant Palestinian group. The five are Ramadan Shalah, who worked at an Al-Arian think tank at the University of South Florida and who now runs PIJ from Syria, Abid al-Aziz Adha, PIJ's original spiritual leader, Al-Arian's brother-in-law, Mazen al-Najjar, leading Muslim scholar Bashir Nafi, and Muhammad Tasir al-Khatib, the group's alleged treasurer. So note that Al-Arian is being tried in a conspiracy case, and there would appear to be a relatively weak case for his conspiring with his co-defendants. Note that the lapse of time in which the prosecution of Sami Al-Arian was brought has permitted the statute of limitations to expire, and as we saw in our interview with John Loftus, one of the major reasons for that, not only the Saudi-American economic connections, but also the fact that ultra-powerful right-wing lobbyist Grover Norquist was working on behalf of these people, that delayed the bringing of charges as well as the lawsuit that John Loftus had filed, and that was one of the factors in allowing the statute of limitations to expire. And again, if Al-Arian gets off, and that would certainly appear to be a possibility, you can expect the so-called progressive sector to say, see, oh, look, this poor persecuted creature. In fact, the guy's a monster. But that is life in the big city, as they say. We're going to take a look at Sami Al-Arian and how the investigation into Al-Arian led to the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002, and the Safa Network, the Safa Trust, and the SAR Network, and how this in turn links to the Muslim Brotherhood Bank Al-Taqwa and the elements associated with George Bush. We're now going to be turning to excerpts of the book House of Bush, House of Saud by Craig Unger. And in that book, we read, and by the way, this was talked about in For the Record 464. On March 12, 2000, Bush and his wife Laura met with more Muslim leaders at a local mosque in Tampa, Florida. Among them was Sami Al-Arian, a Kuwaiti-born Palestinian who was an associate professor of engineering at the University of South Florida. But Al-Arian had unusual credentials for a Bush campaigner. Since 1995, as the founder and chairman of the Board of World and Islam Enterprise, or WISE, a Muslim think tank, Al-Arian had been under investigation by the FBI for his associations with Islamic Jihad, the Palestinian terrorist group. Al-Arian brought in Ramadan Abdullah Shalah, the number two leader in Islamic Jihad, to be the director of WISE. A strong advocate of suicide bombings against Israel, Shalah was allegedly responsible for killing scores of Israelis in such attacks. Al-Arian also brought to Tampa as a guest speaker for WISE none other than Hassan Turabi, the powerful Islamic ruler of Sudan who had welcomed Osama bin Laden and helped nurture al-Qaeda in the early 90s. By the way, parenthetically, Hassan Turabi, also a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Continuing. Nor were those al-Arian's only ties to terrorists, according to American Jihad by Stephen Emerson. In May of 1998, a WISE board member named Tariq Hamdi personally traveled to Afghanistan to deliver a satellite telephone and battery to Osama bin Laden. In addition, Newsweek reported that al-Arian had ties to the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center. Among his claims to fame, the magazine said, al-Arian, quote, had made many phone calls to two New York area Arabs who figured in the World Trade Center bombing investigation. There were also al-Arian's own statements. In 1998, he appeared as a guest speaker before the American Muslim Council. According to conservative author Kenneth Timmerman, al-Arian referred to Jews as, quote, monkeys and pigs, unquote, and added, jihad is our path, victory to Islam, death to Israel, revolution, revolution until victory, rolling, rolling to Jerusalem, unquote. That speech was part of a dossier compiled on al-Arian by federal agents who have had him under surveillance for many years because of suspected ties to terrorist organizations. In a videotape in that file, al-Arian was more explicit. When he appeared at a fundraising event, Timmerman says he, quote, begged for $500 to kill a Jew, unquote. Al-Arian would be arrested in Florida in February of 2003 on dozens of charges, among them conspiracy to finance terrorist attacks that killed more than 100 people, including two Americans. The indictment alleged that, quote, he directed the audit of all monies and property of the PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, throughout the world, and was the leader of the PIJ in the United States, unquote. The charges refer to the Islamic Jihad as, quote, a criminal organization whose members and associates engaged in acts of violence including murder, extortion, money laundering, fraud, and misuse of visas, and operated worldwide, including in the Middle District of Florida. Al-Arian was still facing prosecution in December of 2003. And now we're going to continue with the discussion of how the investigation of Sami al-Arian led to the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002. This is from the book Blood from Stones by Douglas Farah, a Washington Post reporter, about the financing of al-Qaeda and other Islamist terrorist groups. How the investigation of Sami al-Arian led to the Operation Green Quest raids. The raid on al-Arian led to the Safa Group. The FBI found letters documenting Safa entities' financial support of al-Arian to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars a year. In a September 7, 1993 letter, Safa Group leaders told one al-Arian-led group, "We consider you a part of us, and an extension of us, and we as a part of you," unquote, adding that their financial donation of tens of thousands of dollars was, quote, "for you as a group, regardless of the party or the facade you use the donation for," unquote. But the al-Arian and Safa group investigations languished. In the 2000 elections, al-Arian supported George W. Bush, urging Muslims to vote Republican as the best hope of discrimination against Arab Americans. Al-Arian and his family were photographed with a beaming Bush and his wife Laura during a Florida campaign stop. Al-Arian liked to boast that he had delivered considerably more, unquote, than the 537 votes that gave Bush his victory in Florida and allowed him to capture the White House. On June 20, 2001, al-Arian was invited to the White House as part of a large delegation of Muslims to be briefed by presidential advisor Karl Rove. And then, from the House of Bush, House of Saud by Craig Unger, in 2002, during the presidency of George W. Bush, Talat Otman again won access to the White House and met with Secretary of the Treasury Paul O'Neill to discuss U.S. government raids on Muslim charities that were allegedly funding terror. By the way, that is a reference to Talat Otman, a director of Harkin Energy, a political ally, contributor to, and personal friend of both Georges Bush. Talat Otman was a key member of Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute. He gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican Convention in 2000. Again, he was a director of George Bush's Harkin Energy, and Talat Otman interceded on behalf of the targets of the Operation Green Quest raid stemming from the investigation of Sami al-Arian. He interceded with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who was fired some 8 months later, and that investigation has languished. More now from House of Bush, House of Saud. Is it a, quote, coincidence, unquote, that federal employees in Tampa, quote, accidentally, unquote, destroyed key paperwork in the Alarion case? In December 2003, clerks at a federal courthouse in Tampa accidentally destroyed search warrants in the Alarion case. The documents contained affidavits from federal agents that supported 1995 searches of Alarion's home and offices and were among thousands of documents shredded sometime between 1998 and 2002. As this book went to press, there were serious questions as to whether the destruction of the documents might affect his prosecution. So again, note the key factor that the destruction of these documents, the quote accidental unquote documents that could have figured into the prosecution of George Bush associate Sami Alarion, it remains to be seen how the quote accidental unquote destruction of those documents figures into the Alarion case. Don't be too surprised if Alarion gets off. Note again that in connection with the investigation of the Bank Altaqua headed up by former Third Reich intelligence agent Youssef Nada, who along with his fellow Altaqua officer Ali Galeb Himat, both of them, by the way, members of the Muslim Brotherhood, they had five children between them in the United States between 1979 and 1984 in the Washington Beltway area. Bear in mind that as Muslims, they have more than one wife. Turning once again to the book Blood from Stones by Douglas Farah, talking about how the investigation of the Operation Green Quest raids, again, that spurred by the investigation into Alarion, how this led to Bank Altaqua. Operation Green Quest was launched in October 2001 as part of the Customs Service initiative to track bin Laden's financial empire. In a small, windowless conference room, Green Quest agents charted the Byzantine relationships among the more than 100 Safa Network entities, a spiderweb of overlapping names and organizations. Green Quest investigators also charted the relationship among the Safa Network entities and the Muslim Brotherhood through the Altaqua management empire of Youssef Nada. U.S. officials said they had tracked about $20 million from Safa entities flowing through Nada's bank Altaqua, but said the total could be much higher, unquote. The ties between Nada and Safa leaders were many and long-standing, as were their ties to other Brotherhood leaders. Two members of the Safa group helped set up Bank Altaqua in the Bahamas, and several Safa leaders loaned Nada money. In 1976, two other men who later became prominent in the Safa group founded Nada International, a Brotherhood bank in Liechtenstein. For a time, Suleiman Abdul al-Raji, the SAR Foundation founder, worked for Nada at that bank. Nada International was designated a terrorist financier by the Treasury Department after 9/11. But bear in mind that quite possibly as a result of the consummate access of this Muslim Brotherhood Islamo-fascist milieu to the White House and the GOP, Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, George Bush, etc., surprise, surprise, some of these investigations have been languishing. I expect, too, that the role they played in defeating the Soviets in Afghanistan has also been some currency that the political currency they've been able to muster on their behalf. Since September 11th, the neo-Nazi right and also elements of the nitwit left, for lack of a better term, have been talking about some of the, quote, neocons, unquote, in particular people like Paul Wolfowitz of Jewish extraction, as behind the great Zionist conspiracy that was steering the U.S. on behalf of Israel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Arguments that are not only basically Nazi in their orientation, but which have had quite a bit of distribution. Indeed, stuff like that is lurks at the periphery, and maybe even more than that, of the so-called progressive sector. Simply listen to some of the garbage coming out of the so-called progressive sector, and you'll hear this one. Chief among those is Deputy Defense Chief among the targets of this kind of misconception is Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz. Paul Wolfowitz, in keeping with the first syllable of his last name, is a dog of the first order. I don't want to be misunderstood as holding a brief for this fellow, but an interesting detail, and this perhaps to be taken in the context of the GOP Islamist connection, is the fact that he has been dating, apparently, he has been very tight with an Arab woman who, now it should be said on her behalf that she appears to be an Arab feminist. She is also a communications advisor in the World Bank. It is not apparent that she has any fundamentalist connections whatsoever. On the other hand, who knows, there may be something that is hidden. But for those people who insist on clinging to the Zionist conspiracy and talking about Paul Wolfowitz and the other neocons, Paul Wolfowitz is boinking an Arab woman. Following us from the WashingtonPost.com of March 22, 2005, What Will the Neighbors Say? Wolfowitz Romance Stirs Gossip by Richard Leiby, L-E-I-B-Y. It reads in part, Social Washington has been buzzing for months about the discreet romance between Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz and Shaha Riza, an Arab feminist and a communications advisor at the World Bank. Now that he's been nominated to head the bank and their relationship has become public, some of Riza's neighbors have been irked enough to dish. This being Washington, there's a political undercurrent to the gossip. Turns out that some Iraq war foes in the diplomat-heavy neighborhood of South of American University don't seem to appreciate that Wolfowitz regularly spends the night at Riza's home. Two residents told us that Wolfowitz's guards wait in a car outside until he departs early in the morning. Quote, they kind of picked the wrong place if they want to be private about it. I don't know if it could be more public if it were on 16th and K Street, said one neighbor who declined to be identified, citing a desire to maintain cordial relations with Riza. It's an international neighborhood, and he's the icon for a fabulously expensive, tragic war. It's the one thing we talk about now. And skipping down about Ms. Riza, she is, quote, Riza, an Oxford-educated British citizen, was born in Tunisia and grew up in Saudi Arabia. She's known for her expertise on women's rights and has been listed on the bank's website as a media contact for Iraq reconstruction issues, and thereby quite possibly hangs a tale. Iraqi reconstruction has been an enormously lucrative and consummately corrupt process. We haven't got time to go into that. I would note the following, too, but certainly note her role. She's a contact for the Iraq reconstruction process. Note also, now, I don't have much information about this, but a very reliable research source says that her first husband was a Turkish individual, Turkish man, Bülent Alireza, who was associated with the CSIS, that's the Center for Strategic and International Studies Turkey Project. We haven't got time to go into this here. One thought, and this is just a thought, what I call food for thought and grounds for further research, I wonder if the CSIS Turkey Project, with which Ms. Riza's former husband is associated, I wonder if that has anything to do with the nexus that Sibel Edmonds was trying to call attention to. Sibel Edmonds, a suppressed FBI whistleblower well known to investigators of September 11th. Again, food for thought, grounds for further research. Note again, Spitfire, www.spitfirelist.com, tons of written material. Also note, WFMU.org/Dave Emery, and a related site. All of the For the Record shows available. They're podcasting For the Record, and the Spitfire website has tons of information and links to tons more. This concludes For the Record program number 515, more on the GOP-Islamist connection, this being recorded on June 12th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.